It is April the 29th, 2012. I am Steve Gerwick, the webmaster of www.gerweck.net, your source on the World Wide Web for all your pro wrestling and MMA news since 1997. And we're just minutes after the WWE Extreme Rules pay-per-view. And to help me out tonight to give you some thoughts and perspectives on the pay-per-view from ProWrestling.net, I have Jerry Wiseman. How you doing tonight, Jerry?
Brother, I am living large and feeling no pain, Steve. Glad to be here. Coming down off of a high that was the match between Brock Lesnar and John Cena, one of my candidates for match of the year, followed by the CM Punk-Chris Jericho match. Man, what a show it was tonight.
Yeah, I think the top three matches definitely delivered. You had the WWE Championship match, which was the Chicago Street Fight with CM Punk and Chris Jericho. The two out of three falls match for the World Heavyweight Championship with Daniel Bryan and Sheamus. And, of course, the main event tonight, obviously, was Brock Lesnar's return to WWE to take on John Cena. The top three matches definitely delivered. And then, as typical, I think, with WWE pay-per-views, Jerry, there was some matches mixed in, a couple of non-advertised matches that really didn't do much for the show, pre-card match that really didn't live up to much. And, you know, they had a couple things in the middle that really didn't do much for the pay-per-view overall. But I think when you add up the three big matches on this show, overall I thought it was a pretty good show tonight.
Well, if you take the corn out of the crap, you still have crap. But in this case, not so much stinky crap that you usually see. This is a lot better than the normal B-show pay-per-views that the WWE puts on. They have to put in the crap, the corn for filler, like the match with Ryback. The squash match was absolutely horrible. You had a ladies' match that reminded me of a match I saw 20 years ago in WCWO with Don Basher, where nobody cared who these two girls were, and they had a title change then. And did the same move 15 times in that match, and nobody cared. It didn't work. The ladies' match didn't work on this show for me. Johnny Ace, he needs to stay off camera because he annoys the hell out of me. He sounds like a guy from Storage Wars, Daryl, whatever his name is. This is a wow factor right here. And rubbing his fingers together like he has a bunch of money, you know. The Miz looked horrible at the beginning of the show in the pre-show match. You know, there was a lot of things that didn't work, but for everything that didn't work, the things that did work really put this show over the top.
Yeah, I think it kind of really points back to, if I go back to WrestleMania, I don't know what your overall thoughts on WrestleMania was. The top matches really delivered, and the undercard matches were just, you know, so-so, maybe even below average. And I think it really speaks to what WWE is right now, is that the roster's not real deep. You do have some talent on top, but when you get to the middle and to the back end of the roster, you don't have much depth at all. And then when you have a show where you have actually eight matches on the show, you're going to get a show where you have some really good matches and a show where you have some really poor matches.
Well, WrestleMania was good. It was better. I was really disappointed in 25. That should have been a great show just because it was the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania. But the show last year delivered on almost every level with the exception of the Brodus Clay crap. It just doesn't work for me. That gimmick is horrible. Kids love it, but that's not your target audience. It's not. They're not going to buy the pay-per-views. The parents aren't going to buy the pay-per-views because the kids wants to see some fat guy up there shaking and wiggling his ass. They don't want to see that. They're wasting time with Brodus Clay. Some of his offense tonight was absolutely horrible. In the middle of the show before the Ryback match, you had Santino and the great Kali. And Kali said something that I don't even think Booker T could understand. And I just kind of lost interest at that point. But then when Jericho and Punk came out and they put on the show that they did, I was right back in it. You had the palate cleanser with the ladies and then back into the main event, which delivered on a lot of different levels. And to me, this match with Lesnar and Cena was better than the Cena-Rock match at WrestleMania.
And we'll talk about that match when we get to the main event. And, of course, we were alluding to the show itself started up with a pre-match, or I should say a pre-show match that aired on YouTube. It was Santino Marella defending the U.S. Championship against The Miz. Really nothing to speak of. I mean, it's pretty much a TV match. 4 minutes and 37 seconds. Morella wins with the Cobra, keeps the U.S. championship. And I don't know, Jerry, the Miz must be in the doghouse right now.
I think the Miz is wishing he was back on the reality show. His offense looks horrible. He doesn't care in the ring. I don't think he even wants to be in the business anymore. His star has lost its polish. I mean, he's supernova and he's all over the place, except where he needs to be. We spoke a little bit earlier before we started talking about this, and I don't really care much for Santino Morella's gimmick. The guy, he's legit, and they could do so much more with him, but this half comedy and the sock puppet and all of this, it doesn't work. It's a disgrace to the U.S. Championship, which it has a great story history, much like the Intercontinental title, and they're putting more emphasis on the IC title, which they should, because it's a great championship with a lot of history behind it too. But I think they need to take so many secondary titles that, you know, they defend one on this show, one on that show. Just make them one title and have the champion appear on both shows instead of doing what they're doing with it, because they're really destroying the legacy of this. And some of these gimmicks that they have these guys do, like Marilla and Brodus Clay, it's just awful. It just doesn't work.
You know, it's funny. When the show was on and I was watching it, I was thinking what the title matches were, and I was thinking there's no world tag team title match, and I really couldn't remember. When was the last time the tag team titles were defended on pay-per-view?
You know, that's a good question. I know the tag team champions are over in Puerto Rico defending the belts over there on a non-WWE show, which shows just how much disdain Vince McMahon has for tag team wrestling and the titles and their legacy. And that's a shame, because some of the best wrestling that's ever been put in the ring sometimes have been tag team matches. If you want to go back to Steamboat and Youngblood in the NWA in the Mid-Atlantic, and hell, even Tony Atlas and Rocky Johnson, when they battled the Wild Samoans and won the tag team title to become the first African-American tag team in the history of the business, there was a lot of value to the belts back then. But that was McMahon Sr. McMahon Jr. just does not care for tag team wrestling and discounts those titles more than he does the secondary championships like the IC title and the U.S. title.
Totally agree with you there. We should also mention on the pre-show, they did the spin the wheel for the stipulation for the Big Show, Cody Rhodes, Intercontinental Championship match. They had Eve and Teddy Long backstage, and Teddy spun the wheel, came up with a tables match, and the Big Show told Cody Rhodes, good luck getting him through a table, which we'll talk about as we go along. We talk about that stipulation and that ending to that match. But we opened up the pay-per-view. They announced the crowd at 14,817. They were at the Allstate Arena in Chicago. Of course, this is, of course, the hometown of CM Punk. We opened up the pay-per-view itself with Randy Orton and Kane, a rematch from WrestleMania. Falls count anywhere, and they really did brawl all over the place. They brawled into the crowd. They brawled into the backstage area. And finally, they were able to get everything squared away, and they went back into the arena. Ended up in the ring itself for the pinfall, but there was a spot where backstage there was an area, I guess, corded off for the WWE superstars and WWE divas to be watching the television screen in the back. At one point, Zack Ryder tried to get involved. Of course, the storyline was with Kane and Zack Ryder. He tried to interfere a little bit. He was pretty much a non-factor. Kane pretty much threw him off. And in the end, Randy Orton, I guess, gets his win back from WrestleMania. I don't know about you, Jerry. I'm not a real big fan of falls count anywhere matches. I just think the idea of wrestling is that you decided in a ring, you know, the thought of I can pin you on the floor, I can pin you in the crowd, or I can pin you backstage, or even outside, just kind of loses its effect when, you know, almost 99% of the matches are settled in the ring. I don't know. Your thoughts on this opening match?
The match in itself was okay for what it was. They were way too long in the crowd, way too long backstage. They looked like they'd blown up. When you can do a false count anywhere match, but it's difficult to pull off. And they were way too long outside the ring. In the back, the part with Zach absolutely killed the momentum of the match. It meant nothing. It just seemed out of place when they were fighting back in the green room. And then there was a comedy spot when the cameraman fell down as they were coming out of the green room back there. I mean, it can work, but they're so limited as to what they can do in the WWE. Now, Falls Count Anywhere in the old ECW, you know, it worked fine because there was so much more that they could do because they were homicidal almost in the old ECW. Whereas these guys aren't going to do that because instead of, you know, $100 payoffs, they're getting $100,000 payoffs. So they're not going to wreck their career to do something stupid or suicidal in this type of match. But it was good for what it was. It was a decent way to open the show. I think it would have been better had they just left Zack Ryder out of it and they got back to the ring a little sooner, because I was sitting here thinking, you guys have been out way too long. You look like you've blown up, and it's time to get back in the ring.
Yeah, they went 16 minutes and 43 seconds by my clock, and I think if they would have cut out about 2 or 3 minutes of this match, it probably would have been a better match overall from a star quality. I don't get into rating the matches in terms of, you know, 1 star, 3 stars, 5 stars, but overall, Jerry, I thought this match was better than the WrestleMania match.
I would agree with you. And again, I don't give ratings a thumbs up, a thumbs down, a, you know, pick your nose with it. I don't do that either. But you know, I did mention in my report on ProWrestling.net that that Zack Ryder's spot took it from being a 4-buckle tap to a 3. It just didn't fit. It just, that part didn't work for me. And I think you're right. Had they taken shaved 3 or 4 minutes off of it, which would have been a lot of that outside of the ring, backstage fighting, it would have been a lot better.
We go backstage, and John Laurinaitis is talking to Eve. He just said that was a heck of a match. Way to open up the pay-per-view. We see Eve backstage with John Laurinaitis, and they bring in Teddy Long, now the personal servant, I guess, of those two. He's got champagne on a cart. He pours the champagne for Eve and John Laurinaitis. The phone rings. It's Triple H. Laurinaitis decides he's going to take this call away from the cameras. And then we'll talk about that a little bit later. They do allude to the phone conversation, although they really don't say much about it tonight. And then we see the disco ball fall down from the rafters, and it's time for Brodus Clay. And right off the bat, the second match on the pay-per-view, we have a unadvertised, I guess, special attraction, special match. It's Brodus Clay. He comes to the ring. He dances with Hornswoggle and his dancers. We hear, "Excuse me." Out comes Vicky Guerrero. She introduces her man, Dolph Ziggler. It's Dolph Ziggler with Jack Swagger and Vicky Guerrero against Brodus Clay. Pretty short match here, 4 minutes and 16 seconds. Really nothing to speak of. Again, to me, it felt like a television match, just kind of like the Santino match was for the pre-show. But they did have Clay win with his maneuver. And 4 minutes and 16 seconds, I don't know, Jerry, it's not good these days to either be Dolph Ziggler or The Miz.
I would have to agree. I don't know what Ziggy's done to get on the bad side of the execs backstage. Like I said earlier, I cannot stand the Brodus Clay gimmick. It's absolutely awful. Anytime Vicky Guerrero comes out, I want to change the channel. I thought in my head as soon as this match started that if the rest of the show is going to be like this, I'm going to complain that I want a refund. And Vicky Guerrero was outside the ring waving her arms up and flapping them around. And all I could think of was Rocky the Flying Squirrel from Bullwinkle. She was just going to start swooping down over the ring with that arm flap. This was just awful. There was nothing good about it. I do not like Hornswoggle. This is nothing but for kids or people who are mentally challenged, because they're the only ones that can really get into this kind of gimmick, and that's a shame, because this is not what I want to see on a pay-per-view. You're right, I don't want to see TV matches on something that's costing me $45.
Wasn't Dolph Ziggler in the title match at Royal Rumble?
Dolph Ziggler was in the title hunt, you are right, and whatever has happened, I've not heard. I don't know if you've heard anything, but Ziggy seems to be in the doghouse, much like The Miz, although Ziggy has a good look. He's a decent worker, much like The Miz was in the beginning, but Miz seems like he doesn't care. I'm not sure what's going on with Ziggy Stardust.
Yeah, a lot of comparisons to Billy Gunn. I know when I talked to Billy Gunn, we did an interview with him last year. One of his personal favorites is Dolph Ziggler, so I don't know what's going on either. Again, I really thought they were pushing him towards the main event. And here he is, unadvertised match, and he losing to Brodus Clay. Now, I got to say, overall, I think Brodus Clay is entertaining, but the second match on this show to bring out the disco ball and to really job out Dolph Ziggler in 4 minutes, that's a shame. I don't understand the booking here and the direction for Dolph Ziggler. Where are they going with this guy? It's just totally confusing to me.
We see
a recap of the spin the wheel, and again it was the tables match. So the third match on the show was the Intercontinental Championship match, fought under tables rules. It was the Big Show defending against Cody Rhodes. They set up tables pretty much everywhere. There was tables on the entrance ramp, all leading all the way down the ring. They had tables set up in front of the announce tables. Tables everywhere here. And the ending of this match was kind of perplexing to me. They did a spot where the Big Show was on the apron. He's going back into the ring. He had just brought in a table. He had one leg up. Cody Rhodes drop-kicked him, drop-kicked his leg specifically. His leg fell to the floor and crashed through a table. Now, he looked a little stunned. He looked like okay, I broke the table, but, the match should end this way. The referee turned around. He saw it. He called for the bell, and he declared Cody Rhodes the new Intercontinental Champion. I don't know about you. I'm not a big fan of tables matches either. Especially when they have an ending like this, really kind of a fluky ending to the Big Show's title reign. I guess maybe it was just they had to give Big Show the championship match or the championship going back to WrestleMania, but I really did not like this ending at all.
Anytime the WWE sends out their champion first in a title match, the challenger is going to go over. You're going to see a title change. That's the way it always seems to be in about 97% of the matches where the champion is out first, and it was 100% that way tonight on this pay-per-view. I agree with you. I do not like table matches. They take way too long to set up. This one was helped a little bit by the number of tables that were set up. The ending was different. It wasn't what anybody expected, which I think was the purpose, but it was a cheap ending to what could have been a really good match. Show kept his heat by throwing Cody through a couple of tables at the end. So, it something a little different, a little that you don't expect out of this type of match. And Rhodes took a couple of big bumps for Show in getting the title back. There's a little bit more emphasis on the importance of the Intercontinental Championship than on the U.S. title. And I'm really kind of enjoying the Big Show Cody Rhodes match right now, much like I did the Big Show and Mark Henry feud that went on late last year and early this year. It was really good for what it was for two big guys. Mark Henry's come a long way. I was with him in Ohio Valley Wrestling for a while when he was down there. He was scared to try and take a backdrop. I don't think they ever convinced him. And he's come a long way. He really came into his own lately, and I'm really surprised he wasn't on this show.
We should also note that this match, again, was 4 minutes and 35 seconds long. Again, so he had really two short matches, the second and third matches, after a really long match to open up the show. We also should note that after the match, you were talking about Big Show destroying Cody Rhodes. He speared him. He slammed him through a table, and then it looked like he was going to leave. The fan would kind of encourage him to do one more table. There was a table set up on the outside of the ring, and then there was a spot where Big Show tossed Rhodes over the top rope through the table on the arena floor. The good news was that Rhodes was fine. He got up. He celebrated. He held the title up, kissed the championship belt, so it looked like Cody was okay. And again, I don't know, Jerry, 4 minutes and 35 seconds, a four-minute match, the second match, unadvertised. And I was probably with you at this point. I was really wondering if this was going to be a good show or not.
I was thinking the same thing. I figured Daniel Bryan Sheamus would go quite a while, being a 2-out-of-3-fall match. I figured they would work the first fall for the majority of the time, and then the last two falls would come almost back-to-back in almost an old-school type of 2-out-of-3-fall match, which, in the old days, all title matches were 2-out-of-3-falls. And I really did appreciate the WWE bringing the champion and the challenger into the ring, and then introducing them to put importance on the title. That's something the business as a whole needs to do, is start putting a little bit more importance on the belts. I know they're just gimmicks, but they really need to mean something again in my eyes. So I figured we'd see a long match here. I figured Jericho Punk would go long. And I was looking at Lesnar, Cena to go maybe 20, 25 minutes. So the pacing of the matches, the ones that needed to be long, they delivered. The ones that needed to be short, they told the story that they needed to, I guess.
I think one thing they got to do in the future is map out the timing of the pay-per-view, say on Raw or on SmackDown, the week leading into the pay-per-views. Because to me, they should have known that six matches on the show, they had six advertised matches for this show, that they're going to need some extra matches. They probably knew that ahead of time going in. They should at least kind of mapped out the pay-per-view on Monday or Tuesday, and then on the TV that week, try to at least put a couple more matches on the show that people have some idea who's on the show. I think there was a lot of people that were very upset to see a Brodus Clay out there. I think there was a lot of people that were upset to see a Rayback out there. I just think the way they do their television leading into the pay-per-view, the go-home shows on Raw and SmackDown, they should just time it out and really see how many matches they need and then try to advertise those matches for the show.
I would agree with you. I mean, when Fritz Von Erich ran World Class, his house shows would be 90 minutes. And that included anywhere from usually a 15-minute to a 30-minute intermission. And the main event was one of the quickest matches on the show. It was usually anywhere from 8 to 13 minutes. So if Fritz Von Erich can map out a house show at 90 minutes, night after night after night after night, the WWE can certainly map out how long each match is going to go a little bit better than the way that they're doing it now, and throw in those unadvertised matches at the last minute, try and pop a couple of extra buys. Although, had I known Brodus Clay was going to be on there with Ziggy Stardust, I may have said, you know what, I just don't want to see it. I don't want to waste my money for it. So that might be part of the reason that, you know, they try and fill with this kind of comedy stuff that Brodus Clay is. And that guy is just absolutely horrible on offense. I've seen a lot of wrestling over the last 40 years, and that guy is just one of the worst. I hate to keep dwelling on it, but God, does he suck.
I think you've made that point pretty clear.
We move on Daniel Bryan next.
Okay, well, actually, that's the next match we're leading into, the World Heavyweight Championship match. We did see a promo for Edge's new DVDs. Again, we see a couple commercials here and there, promos in between the matches. Backstage, we see Matt Stryker interview Daniel Bryan. Stryker is asking him about the best two out of three matches, the match itself. Does it give him the advantage? And, of course, Brian kind of went nuts on him, saying that that's kind of a dumb question coming from a teacher. It's one of the reasons that the educational system in this country is going south very fast. And he really puts himself over, obviously puts down Sheamus. And then they start the yes, yes, yes chant. He walks away. We see AJ in the background, kind of wondering if she maybe will get involved in the championship match.
I wondered that myself.
To kind of show her backstage like that, you kind of think that maybe she'll come out at some point and at least have some sort of factor in this match. But she did not get involved at all. We did not see her the rest of the night. The fourth match on the show was the two out of three falls for the World Heavyweight Championship. I guess, Jerry, at least they didn't put this match on as the curtain jerker on the show.
I love two out of three fall matches, but they're very formulaic. I would like to see somebody take a two-out-of-three-fall match and really turn it into a spectacle. But it hasn't been done for a number of years. There's been a lot of two-out-of-three-fall matches that just failed to deliver. This one was okay for what it was, considering who the participants were. I don't care much for Daniel Bryan. I never have, and nobody will ever convince me that he's in the upper echelon of professional wrestlers in this business. Sheamus, I made a note that he... when he's on the stick, he kind of sounds like an Irish Dusty Rhodes, so that's not helping him much. But neither one of them are anywhere near what a Dusty Rhodes could do in a two-out-of-three falls match. Even Ric Flair, when he was actually good and not doing the same match for 35 years, could really work a 2 out of 3 fall match and make it interesting. These two, you know, it was good for what it was. Didn't care for the doctor spot in this when they were checking on Sheamus. Kind of killed the momentum, but it did, you know, set up the first, I don't want to say fall because it was a DQ, but it played well into the second pinfall. And it just kind of fell apart for me when they brought in the doctor thing. There was at one point there where the doctor wanted to check Sheamus' eyes to make sure, you know, he was okay and he was lucid. And he filled his little pin light up but didn't turn it on and didn't even turn it up into his eyes. And I thought, well, that's kind of awful. Chicken wing for 20 minutes, it seemed like. Chicken wing, chicken wing, chicken wing, chicken wing. Oh, look, an elbow, an elbow, an elbow. Oh, chicken wing, chicken wing, chicken wing. I kind of got hungry for some KFC in the middle of this match, but when it finally ended, I was glad, just because I really got tired of Daniel Bryan, and I don't ever want to hear the word yes again, not even from my wife in the throes of passion. I don't want to hear anybody telling me yes, sir. I just don't care if I ever hear that word again. That's two things Daniel Bryan has ruined for me now. Thank you very much.
Yeah, a couple things to note also. There was a T-shirt that Sheamus wore. It was 18 seconds. And, of course, when the match went beyond 18 seconds, the announcers made a big deal that the match actually went on longer than 18 seconds.
You know, I would never wear a T-shirt that says 18 seconds without some kind of an explanation on it somewhere, because that really does not make Sheamus look like very much of a man.
You know, too, at the end of the first fall, Bryan is kicking Sheamus in the ropes. The referee is calling for the break. He doesn't get it. Bryan can just continues to wail on him. They call for the disqualification. Now, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but in a 2 out of 3 falls match, if you're disqualified, you can't win the championship.
Yeah.
I don't believe so. Generally,
they have usually the third fall is the one that's the DQ. It's usually a fall apiece, and then one or the other gets disqualified. In you know, towns or promotions where the champion can lose the title on the DQ, you know, of course, the third fall, it's going to be a fall apiece, and then, you know, the challenger is going to get disqualified. Or, you know, if the champion can't lose the title on the DQ, the champion usually gets disqualified. So, yeah, it kind of made the match go backwards, which is pretty typical of a Daniel Bryan match, because nothing makes sense, nothing moves forward.
Yeah, I seem to remember a Saturday night's main event match. I think it was the Hart Foundation for the tag team champions, and I can't remember if they were wrestling Strike Force or Demolition or the Killer Bees. It might have been the Killer Bees. There was a disqualification in the first fall, and then the heels got pinned in the final fall, and everybody thought the title was going to change hands, but then Jesse the Ventura, the heel, said, well, wait a minute, the titles can't change hands on a disqualification. And Vince finally had to say, oh, yeah, that's right, the first fall was a disqualification. So by my estimations, I don't think Daniel Bryan could have won the title because he was disqualified in the first fall. Somebody can go through the record books and look back, but I'm pretty certain of that. So that, for me, when I saw Daniel Bryan get disqualified, I thought, you know, it made him look really stupid, because he was the one that purposely almost got disqualified. And by getting disqualified in this match, and they didn't allude to this at all in the commentary, obviously, but if you get disqualified in any of the falls in a title match, you can't win the championship. So to me, by watching this match, it made Daniel Bryan look really stupid.
Well, he is. And again, you know, it's one of those things. I think Cole did try to cover it up a little bit by saying that Bryan didn't care that he got disqualified. He had a plan.
Right.
And maybe this was part of Daniel Bryan's plan, was just to make a point to Sheamus that he can beat him anytime he wants to, however he wants to, which is the only way he's going to beat him is if somebody tells Sheamus to lay down, because I'm not a big Daniel Bryan fan, and I pretty much don't think Bryan could beat Sheamus in a shoot.
I guess the other way you think about it, too, is, you know, you and I grew up watching a lot of great wrestling matches in the 70s and 80s. And, you know, it used to be back in the day is you would earn a title shot. And now I think if the strategy from Daniel Bryan's perspective was to beat the hell out of Sheamus, you know, tear his arm up real bad, and then maybe I'll get a rematch on SmackDown or whatever, you know, the following pay-per-view. But to me, you know, when you get a championship match, you should take every opportunity to win the championship, not just say, well, I'll wait for the next title shot because I'll get another title shot coming down the road. To me, it's just this was the pay-per-view. I'm paying $44.95 in standard definition to watch this show. I want to see you win the championship or go for the championship. I don't want to see you, I'll get disqualified, and then maybe I'll try to win the championship later.
Well, you know, you and I both know that this is the booking, but in reality, you know, to understand a Daniel Bryan, you have to think like a Daniel Bryan. So the best thing that you could do in order to think like Daniel Bryan would be to go and get an old-fashioned lobotomy where they would take an ice pick and shove it up your sinus and nasal cavity and jigger it around a little bit and pull out some brain matter, and you drool a little bit. And I think if you or I did that, we could probably be on the same level as Daniel Bryan where intelligence is concerned, and we could understand why he did what he did at the start of this match. But I'm not willing to do that.
Yeah, maybe somebody
can. You can, Steve. You know, go ahead. Jigger, you know, take a little bit of brain out. And maybe we'll have a different conversation about Daniel Bryan next time. You might be able to get through to me.
Let's go on. We got the this is when things got real interesting because we had another unadvertised match. It was the – actually, we saw a plug for the content on WWE's YouTube page. Real exciting. And then we saw a plug for the May 20th Over the Limit pay-per-view with Randy Orton being kind of front and center for that one. Then we saw Great Khali and Santino. They were talking backstage. They had the television monitor on the ring, and in the ring there were two jobbers, which I couldn't tell you their names. I do have them written down.
Somebody.
Yeah, actually, I got the names written down here. If people want to know, they can check the website. But I mean, it doesn't make any difference what their names were. It doesn't matter what your names are, yeah. But because really, it didn't matter what their names were anyways, because although it was surprising to me, they actually let them cut a promo, which really got them booed. And then we saw Rayback come out, which is a guy getting a pretty massive push right now. And he came out. And
I want to know if this guy can pass the wellness test. He is so juiced up, it's not funny. He's Scott Norton big when he was, 20 years ago. And I got heat for saying Scott Norton was on the gas back then. There's just nobody that's that big and that massive, that large, that's not on the gas. I want to see this guy pass a wellness test. I don't think he can do it. I think he would test dirty for something other than just being a lousy wrestler. There's just no way. And, you know, with the Mexican mini Rey Mysterio testing dirty for amphetamines, which when I covered that in one of my columns on ProWrestling.net, I said there's always a possibility that if Mysterio had been living clean as he claims to have been, but he ingested some energy drinks a day or two or even the same day that he took the test, he's going to test dirty for amphetamines because Monster energy drinks are one of the worst for showing false positives on drug tests. So, you know, I'm willing to give Mysterio the benefit of the doubt, but I really would not give the benefit of the doubt to Ryback. I think the guy is dirty. He has to be on something.
And we should note, if people don't know who he is, he was formerly Skip Sheffield with Nexus previously. And, of course, yeah. Ryan Reeves. I think he was back Tough Enough 4, I believe.
I think you're correct.
Yeah, so that's who we're alluding to. He's getting this massive push right now. What was interesting was that there was actually a chance of Goldberg during this match because he was basically destroying these two guys. They were getting virtually no offense. He covered them both, got the pin in a minute 49, and my thought was, why am I paying $44.95 for this match?
Exactly. You know, we should put Goldberg wants to come back. The guy must be desperate for money. He added nothing to the business when he was in it. He'll add nothing to it now, and he still pops an interview once in a while to try and stay relevant, but he's not. So let's go ahead and bring him back, put him in the ring with Ryback as a tag team against these two jobbers, and that'd be four people that mean nothing to the business, can't work, and nobody cares about. But don't charge me $44.95 to watch it. You should be paying me about $440.95 to sit through it. This was awful. This was an awful moment in this spot. This reminded me of the Brodus Clay crap during WrestleMania. It was at that moment in WrestleMania I just wanted to shut it off, and I wanted to get a refund because this is not what I paid to see. This Ryback crap against these two miserable, pathetic, they're not even worthy to be called backyarders, and that's saying something because I have a lot of disdain for backyarders. They're awful.
Yeah, the one guy looked about 118 pounds.
Oh, hell, I don't even think he was that. maybe 118 pounds with a turd on his head. But
soaking wet?
Yeah. Probably not even then, Steve. This was awful. I mean, this is not the way. If they're trying to get Ryback over, this is not the way to do it. He'll put Ryback in there against Brodus Clay. Let's see what would happen then.
Yeah, not to mention for us at on pay-per-view paying the $44.95, but the people that are there at the event, they paid their hard-earned money to watch this this match on this show. Boy, I just really made you scratch your head. We had a promo backstage. CM Punk was interviewed, I think, by Matt Stryker. I don't know where Josh was, and I guess we didn't see him tonight, Josh Matthews. Yeah, he was not on the pre-show. In fact, Matt Stryker worked with Michael Cole, and Michael Cole said that he was kind of demoted to the pre-show, which shows you what they think of the pre-show. And again, going back to that pre-show real quick, why isn't the pre-show on the satellite or cable feed for the pre-show? Why don't we just see a condensed 30-minute version of Raw and SmackDown?
I wish I could answer that. I know they're trying to push the WWE channel on YouTube really hard. There have been some rumors that there's going to be portions of YouTube that it will be a purchase option. If the WWE Network does not ever get launched, they may very well move some of that programming to YouTube and try to get you to pay for it there in you know, certain cells. I mean, they're trying to keep their options open. One thing I wanted to mention about the announcer, Jerry Lawler was strangely quiet tonight. I mean, the one line that he actually did get over was in the ladies' match that we'll talk about here in a minute when he said the switcheroo went switcheroong. That was about the only thing Lawler added to this show tonight, so I don't know where his head was at or why he wasn't more vocal, but the pay-per-view sure could have used his witticisms. That's no, there's no doubt about that.
That's a good observation. There was one point, I know he was in the opening match, and then it was the second or third match where he wasn't saying hardly anything. It was Cole and Booker T, and I thought, did he leave the ringside area? What's going on? And then he'd say a couple words here and there, and it's just like, where's Jerry Lawler tonight? Yeah, I definitely agree with your assessment there. The pay-per-view commentary, there was a lot of jousting between Booker T and Michael Cole tonight. And you're right, Jerry Lawler was very, very quiet, unlike Jerry Lawler tonight.
Yes, very much so.
I guess maybe this wasn't a show where he could really throw in a lot of wit, you know? So I don't know.
One thing that surprised me was, you know, Booker T started out like Booker T does, very much in need of elocution lessons. But as the show progressed, he started to get a little bit more clarity in what he was saying. Either that or I was starting to get a little bit more drunk, and I was only drinking Pepsi. So something happened during the show that brought Booker T out a little bit more. He was able to enunciate, and you could start to understand him a little better than normal. And Jerry Lawler shut up.
And maybe it was that high fructose corn syrup in your Pepsi.
Could have been. Either that or the kettle corn that I have here that I was munching on. So there was just something really a different feel to this pay-per-view tonight, especially where the announcing was happening.
Yeah, CM Punk cut a promo. Obviously, he was very over with the Chicago crowd. It was funny. He mentioned that his friends, family, and fans were there, 20,000. And they announced the attendance is 14,000 plus, but I thought that was kind of funny. But,
it's all relative, you know. I mean, they announced 14,000, there may be 12,000 there. You know, it's all relative. The attendance is a work just like their hometowns and weights. You know, nobody cares much about that unless there's no one there.
It just made me chuckle from the perspective. They always like to push, like during the show, it's a sellout crowd of 14,187, and then CM Punk has a promo. There's 20,000 people here.
Exactly. It's all relative. You know, it's all good. You know, life is a work. Wrestling is real, and you just take it and you run with it.
There you go. That leads us to the WWE Championship match fought under Chicago Street Fight rules. CM Punk against Chris Jericho. CM Punk was huge over tonight. We got the chance to see CM Punk's sister. Now, do you know if this is actually his family, and do you actually know if the storyline is correct that Punk's family has problems with substances.
I don't know for certain that that was his sister. They announced that his mother was there as well. He said he was, Punk said he was going to be wrestling in front of his father, but they made no mention of him or showed anybody on camera that I'm aware of other than the lady supposed to be his sister.
I think his mother was there.
Was she?
I think the mother was sitting next to the sister, but they really, obviously the focal point was the sister tonight.
Yeah, and she got the slap spot in on Jericho, which caused Punk to go crazy. But I felt like when Punk did go crazy like that and started attacking Jericho, he should have kept the heat on Jericho for a little longer than he did. I think that was one spot in the match that kind of took it down just a little, not enough to really have a big effect on the overall quality of the match, because this was one of the best matches of 2012. It's the second best match on the show. They both worked hard. They worked the kendo stick gimmick, which got an ECW chant, which is probably more than what the Extreme Reunion show Saturday night got. But all in all, I mean, both guys worked hard. Punk needed to go over. He was in his hometown. And as long as he wasn't Jim Ross, everyone pretty much knew Punk was going to go over and not be humiliated. So it was a good match. I mean, I was surprised. And after I saw this match, I was really worried about Lesnar and Cena being able to end the show on a high note, especially with Brock being out of the ring for, what, 8 years? And Cena being Cena. I was very surprised that the main event was just as good, and this match between Jericho and Punk is a match of the year candidate.
Yeah, there was a lot of near falls in this one. It went 25 minutes and 12 seconds. There was a spot where Punk grabbed the fire extinguisher and was using it on Jericho. There was a great spot, which he almost lost it. He was on the top rope. Mm-hmm. He was going to jump off onto Jericho, and it looked like he lost his balance a little bit, but he held it together, and that's quite a big jump for him, and he nailed it and got him and Jericho through the table, the Spanish announce table. And I don't know, maybe part of the announcing, the lack of announcing was from the tables. The tables were crushed early tonight.
Yeah, they were. And you were talking about the elbow that Punk stumbled on the top of the rope and went through the table on Jericho. He came up just a little short. He didn't get as much spring off of the rope because he was a lot on the buckle and 1 foot on the rope, and he didn't get as much spring. He almost missed that. Had he been maybe 6-8 inches shorter, he probably would have just bounced off of Jericho, and you wouldn't have had that spot. So that one was kind of perilous. That was a long way for Punk to fly without a good springboard, and he just didn't have it off that top rope.
Yeah, it looked like he was actually going to fall at one point, but he kept his composure. Really wanted to do this spot, and he did nail it. Right, you're right. He didn't hit it perfectly, but he was able to land himself and Jericho through the table, which the fans loved. They were really really into this match through the whole show, through the whole match itself. Obviously, CM Punk was the hero of the night, being in Chicago. And then after the match, they of course had the celebration. CM Punk dove into his family there. I think that's the point where I think they were alluding to his mother was sitting ringside with his sister. But you're right, I didn't see his dad either, so I don't know if his dad was there or not. Obviously, they were alluding that his family was there, but really the only one they really made note of was his sister, who, of course, as you said, got the slap in on Jericho. You knew that spot. You could see that spot coming from 100 miles away, but
sure.
Fans loved it. Yeah.
And let me tell you, those open-handed slaps can hurt a hell of a lot more than getting hit with a kendo stick. I remember getting the taste slapped out of my mouth by Danny Davis' wife in Ohio Valley Wrestling one night, and a few weeks later I was punched by Mike Samples, and it was a working punch, but the slap from Danny Davis' wife hurt a hell of a lot more than that working punch ever did, and I'm not a big guy, so the slap spot was good, and the fire extinguisher was good. The way Punk sold his eyes, Jericho sold his eyes like Punk had shot fire into them instead of just foam, was really good. So, all in all, the only thing that I could really say that hurt this match was that the chin lock in the middle of it for a rest hold. It's a street fight. I don't know anybody on the streets that, you know, they'll stop and just hold somebody down for a minute to catch their breath, because that was the only thing that I kind of chuckled at, was when Jericho went to the rear chin lock to get a breath of air before they continued on. It was a short spot, but it was very out of place in this match.
We see the typical do not try this at home PSA, you know, for the wrestlers there. They're the trained workers and you're the fan, so don't try this at home. We saw highlights for some reason of a Santino-Miz match from the pre-show. And then backstage we saw Eve walking down the hallway. There was Beth Phoenix talking to the Bellas, or they were standing there right next to each other. Eve comes over and tells Beth that she's not medically cleared to wrestle. So the Bellas think they have the night off. They're going to walk away. And Eve says, well, no, not so fast. We promised a Divas match, so we're going to deliver a Divas match. So so Nikki's like, well, who am I going to wrestle? And she said, it'll be a surprise. And she said, don't worry, it's not Karma tonight. So she's happy. She's wondered if it's going to be Mae Young.
That would have been better.
We saw the angle from Raw where Phoenix was hurt. They cut a promo. Actually, I should note that they actually alluded to this on their mobile. If you have the mobile service, they sent a text message that Beth was going to be off the show. So that's so people got the scoop on that a little bit early. The Bellas cut a promo. Couldn't tell you what they said. They did cut a promo. I guess they said, oh, I know. Nikki said that she was going to be the longest reigning Divas champion. Of course, that means she's going to lose. And then we finally get a chance to see who her opponent's going to be, and it's Layla. Ooh, I thought the fans were like, who's this again? We haven't seen her in a year. I guess she was hurt at last year's Extreme Rules. She came out, and she won when the girls did the switcheroo, and Layla actually pinned Bria at 2 minutes and 27 seconds, and Layla is the new Divas champion.
Awful match.
Ugh.
They teased a little bit, and you really had to be paying attention to notice this, but they teased that maybe Brie was going to wrestle Nikki for the title tonight because there's some tension between the two of them, blah, 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 who cares. They're both horrible in the ring. We all know why they're here. We both know why they are there, and it's certainly not for their wrestling ability. Nobody knows who Layla is anymore. I didn't know when she first came out. Who the hell is this? She looked horrible. The Bellas can't do anything, so they couldn't carry her, and it was just a nothing match. It was just a waste of time, but as an aside, it was the palate cleanser between a great match and the main event, which is what they needed, and to be honest, I would rather just had an interview with Beth Phoenix than have this match or watch Brodus Clay work, so, you know, it worked for what it needed to be, which was just a palate cleanser.
But you have to wonder what they're doing here, because obviously the original storyline was Beth was going to get hurt. She didn't have to lose a title to Karma. Then you put the title on one of the Bellas. The Bellas are going to leave anyway, so you can destroy them. You figure Karma, here's a spot where Karma can come out and destroy her. They didn't do that. Maybe there's still something going on with Karma. We don't know. But to give the title to Layla tonight, who just comes back and beats her in 2 minutes, it's just – I know nobody cares about the Divas Championship anyways, but – it just seemed like it came out of nowhere, and I don't think nobody really cared.
Nobody cares about the Divas except to look at them, Steve. The
right.
Ladies' Championship hasn't been anything since the 1960s. And, you know, Moolah held it for 113 years before
right.
She finally dropped it to Wendy Richter. And the only reason she did that was, you know, to get over the whole Wendy Richter
MTV.
What is that stupid girl's name that sang that damn dumb song?
Oh, Cyndi Lauper.
Thank you. That was the only reason she did it. They swerved. They swerved Wendy Richter and gave the belt back to Moolah. Nobody has cared about the ladies' title for years, and it's one of those titles that means even less to Vince McMahon than the tag team championships. Really, all he wants are pretty girls out there shaking their ass to get people to tune in, and. I'm not going to pay $44.95 to watch Divas wrestle unless they're going to wrestle naked and in oil or something. And then there's a couple of them I wouldn't want to see do that either.
I think we're in the wrong era for that. I don't remember the time we saw Sable with the hands over the breast. I don't think we're going to see that anytime soon.
Well, you know what? I tell you, do you remember Stacy Carter when
yes.
she dropped top in that match? I'd rather yep. see that 100 times over than I would see Sable with hands painted on her breast. So, just nobody cares about this crap. It's just pointless. I feel bad for Beth Phoenix. She's a hell of a worker. And I know she's making her money, and that's good. And she's going to have a solid career out of this. She was great in Ohio Valley Wrestling, and she's a really nice lady. And I just don't care much for what McMahon is doing with the Divas. I mean, the knockouts in TNA are a lot better than the Divas in the WWE. And in TNA, you have a couple that can really work. Tara being one of them, and she's formerly of the WWE. I'd like to see Tara go back to the WWE and work a program with Beth Phoenix. Then maybe with the right angle, with the right storyline, you'd get people to really care about the Divas title. Or, as on the other side, Phoenix gets out of her contract, she goes down to TNA, and they work a program down there. Either way, that would be a very successful program, and it would make a lot of money, and it would get some good attention to the ladies' division. And it wouldn't be all just pretty girls shaking their ass that nobody cares about. Again, you're trying to reach your target audience, and the WWE is trying to spread it out as far over that spectrum as they can, trying to hit the little kids, that demographic from the 17 to 34, which is one of the most important and one that spends a lot of money. And they also get the sexagenarians, septuagenarians, octogenarians that they don't have anything better to do, and they're sitting in a nursing home with a little bit of money in their pocket. They're too old to really care what the Divas are doing or what the Knockouts are doing, and they don't understand what Brodus Clay is all about. They're just sitting there pumping money into the WWE. So the WWE is trying to feed the entire spectrum from newborns to almost dead, and they're doing an okay job, but I think if they cut back on some of this comedy and started putting a little bit more effort into the matches like we've seen tonight with Jericho and Punk, Lesnar and Cena, where the storylines, they make sense. The matches are really great. Step away from that PG. Get back up into that PG-13 borderline R mentality when it comes to the pay-per-views, at least on the pay-per-views. And you can tease it on the TV shows. I think they'll start pumping out some really great wrestling, some really great shows, and they'll start putting a lot of money in the pockets and a lot of asses in seats. Kind of a long-winded answer to a really short question, wasn't it?
Yeah. But I agree that the Divas mean nothing, and I agree the Knockouts do have some better wrestlers than the Divas, except there's a couple Knockouts that are not very good either. But we don't want to spend time on that right now because we got to the main event.
That was longer than that damn 2 out of 3 falls match. You shouldn't get me on these rants, Steve. Go learn.
I'll keep that in mind for next time. We had Matt Stryker was backstage. He caught up to John Laurinaitis. He asked him about the conversation with Triple H. He said they were talking business. They probably address it tomorrow night on Raw. So that's what they were. So we really don't know what they're talking about, and who knows if they even will address it tomorrow night. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. We'll see. We saw a highlight package for Cena Lesnar. Then there was chance of, let's go Cena. Cena sucks. And that brought us to the Extreme Rules. John Cena against Brock Lesnar. Boy, Brock looked really good tonight. You know, a lot of people thought he was going to be kind of rusty. He has not wrestled in about, 8 years, I think you said before.
7, 8 years, yeah.
Yeah, same thing with The Rock, 7, 8 years that he thought he was maybe a little bit rusty. Of course, The Rock advantage was that he did work a match at Survivor Series leading into WrestleMania. This was really Lesnar's first wrestling match in quite a while. Although, I should take that back because he did work some shows in Japan.
That was right after he left the WWE.
Right.
And
right.
Lesnar, his cardio stamina is probably a lot better than The Rock's was due to the UFC gig. So, I think Brock getting back into ring shape was more of going back through how to do this and how to do that and when to do this and when to do that, then it was some, it wasn't so much as being able to carry the load. It was just getting back into the mindset of this is a worked match and how to do it. Rock hasn't been in ring shape for years, and so I think being in the UFC probably helped Lesnar a little bit more than The Rock when it came to their stamina.
This match started off, Lesnar went right for Cena, had him down on the mat, started pounding on his head, and busted him open. He started bleeding really profusely. It's been a while since I've really seen that much blood in WWE. I guess they did have some blood at the WrestleMania, but generally they don't allow a lot of blood, and there was a lot of blood here. There was a spot where looked like they were going to stop the match. The referee called for the medics to come in and take a look at him. I guess they tried to clean up as best they could, but Cena was going to really bleed a lot in this one. And then later in the match, they actually had Lesnar bleed, so we actually saw a lot of juice tonight.
I did not see Cena bleed, so unless he did it
no, I didn't either.
Down the
no.
aisle like Dusty Rhodes used to do years ago, especially in his bunkhouse matches with Tully Blanchard, Dusty'd blade walking down the aisle, and he'd be sweating by the time he got there, so he was pouring blood before the match even started. So if Cena took this hard way, I have a lot more respect for John Cena tonight. I love the guy in OVW. I thought he was a lot better worker there than what he was when he got to New York. But, you know, he's been their main event guy for years now, and deservedly so. And tonight I think he showed just exactly what he's made of. This was a tough match. It was a stiff match. I didn't see him blade. I think it would have been better had they just let him bleed. But I understand why they brought in the doctors, because they're still trying to play out the Brock Lesnar MMA thing, blah, blah, blah. That's all well and good. But had Cena been bleeding a lot more, they just let it go, he would have had a great crimson mask. And I think it would have put him over stronger in the end when he pinned Lesnar the way he did, had they just let him bleed. That was the only bad point of the match, the only miss for this match. This was an incredible match, Steve. I had chills as I was watching this match and trying to type. And there's one thing about doing these websites that we do and the reports that we do is, you know, you have to multitask. You have to learn how to type 100 words a minute and not have a whole bunch of typos and still drink your Pepsi, eat your popcorn, talk to your kids, talk to your wife, you know, shoo the cat. There's a whole lot that goes on with this, and I really don't have an opportunity to get into the match. But this match, I was there, and it was incredible.
Yeah, there was a really scary spot. Lesnar, actually it was Cena, was on the apron, and Lesnar launched himself off the ropes, and Lesnar looked like he went over the ropes kind of not the
awkwardly.
Way he wanted to.
Yeah.
Yeah, very awkwardly. It looked like he kind of took the brunt of that blow, and he got up. Actually, he was down on the ground and he's holding his knee, and you thought, ooh, you hope this isn't one of those, you know, goofy spots where he really hurt himself. But he got up after that, and he seemed fine. But that was kind of a scary moment, that match.
It was. It looked more like he tweaked his knee coming out of the ropes. It looked like he got a little tangled up in the ropes coming out. I don't think it was the way he landed, because he landed almost sideways and both legs kind of bouncing. But it looked like whatever he did coming through the ropes, and his foot got tangled up a little bit. But, yeah, it was a little scary. He popped up and was limping just a little bit, and then they finally went home. When this match started, it was almost the bottom of the hour. I figured they'd go about 20 minutes, which they did. And then Cena cutting his promo after the match, it took another 5 minutes. So, you know, you talked about the timing a little earlier. I mean, they actually pulled it off, because this one was a lot better timing-wise than the last pay-per-view and even the last TNA pay-per-view, which I think was about 20 minutes short.
Yeah, they both men were bloodied in this match. Cena actually hit the FU, or I guess the attitude adjustment. Lesnar on the ring steps. He had actually brought the ring steps in earlier to try to submit Cena in the ring. They went 17 minutes and 41 seconds by my calculations. I thought that was about the right time. You thought maybe they'd go a little bit longer, but it was probably about the right time. I didn't want to go too long with Lesnar in his first match back. I thought they kept kept the match at the right pace. I guess the puzzling thing is the outcome of this match, and I know the poll on the WWE website said 60% of the WWE universe thought Cena would win, and then of course we put the poll on our website. 81% thought Brock Lesnar would win. I guess because, you know, Cena lost to The Rock at WrestleMania, he couldn't lose here. But I think Cena losing doesn't do anything for him. I mean, he's obviously established in the company as one of the main stars of the company. So I really, really did expect Brock Lesnar to go over in this match.
I thought Lesnar would go over. It seemed to make sense. But on the other hand, if they don't meet each other again until WrestleMania next year, which this is one of the rumored matches then, it's very possible Brock can get his win back then if he doesn't before. So it works for what they were doing. Cena really doesn't want to go two straight losses in big main events to outsiders, you know, the people that are just coming back for the whatever purpose they're coming back for, to pop a pay-per-view buy in a lot of people's eyes. I was surprised Cena went over, but I think as I look back on it, it was probably the best way for it to happen. It took Cena from one level to the next because of the beating that he took in this match. It was stiff, possibly hardly juice. He took a lot of huge bumps, a lot of huge hits. He took a lot of abuse setting up this match with Lesnar, bloodied his mouth. There was a lot that Cena put out for everybody, and the guy has to have the respect, whether you like him or whether you do not. He has to have the respect of everyone for the beating that he's taken since Brock Lesnar's come back, and this is not going to hurt Brock. He's still a monster. He proved that tonight. Cena proved he can stand up to the monsters. So both guys come out smelling like a rose out of this match. It was a great match. Brock Lesnar's first match in 8 years is a match of the year candidate already, and there's only more good things to come, not only from Cena, but from Lesnar. And I think it's just beginning, Steve. We're starting to see, I think, a new era for the WWE, and Brock Lesnar's going to lead the way along with Cena and probably CM Punk.
Well, I hope so, because this last era has been kind of, you know, put me to sleep. So I'm ready for a new era. I'm ready for something different in WWE. We should also note at the end of you were alluding to this earlier. After the match, a bloodied John Cena got on the mic. It was kind of a confusing promo. He said that he probably would rub people the wrong way. His boss probably wouldn't like this promo. But he said, even though this is CM Punk's town, this is also a wrestling town. And he said he may be going away for a while, and if he's going away for a while, he's going out the way he wanted to go out. And I don't know, it kind of, the way he said it, it made it sound like it was something that probably should have been as a dark promo, but they did put this on the pay-per-view, and it really made it sound like Cena is going away for a while.
They did, and I'm just as confused as you are by it. I'm not sure what to make of it. I haven't heard anything that said John's going away or that he's nursing an injury that's going to keep him out for any length of time. I really don't know what he meant by what he said. So it's just kind of weird.
Yeah, one of those things that kind of it was such a great match, and then they kind of end it that way, and you're thinking, what's going on here? And I know my phone was blowing up. Is he going on vacation? Is he hurt? What's going on here? And we'll probably get more information on Monday, obviously, with leading to Raw. But it was kind of a confusing promo to end the pay-per-view. But that was the pay-per-view, Extreme Rules. And I guess overall, even though there was a lot of the crap on the show, as you were alluding to, you know, the crap from the good stuff, overall, I'd have to give the show a thumbs up.
Well, I don't judge that way, but I tell you, it was a good show. Yeah, it's one of the better pay-per-views that I've seen this year, and it's one of the better pay-per-views probably in the last 6 months, and that includes all pay-per-views that I've seen and pay-per-views. It was a really good show. I mean, if you take out, like I said, if you take the corn out of the crap, you're still going to have crap. But tonight, it was a good kind of crap. So I think we're moving towards some positive change for the WWE. And I hope that we are, because, we spend $100, $150 a month on these pay-per-views and the DVDs that come out so that we can review them. And it's our job, but yet, as a fan, you want to be rewarded, too. I think that as the WWE starts their new evolution. I think you and I, as reporters and all the fans and people watching from home, we're going to start getting our money's worth more and more and more each month, each time the WWE comes out the pay-per-view. Don't really care about Raw, SmackDown. Where I want my money's worth is every month on these pay-per-views, and I think we're going to start seeing it. And I want to go back to John Cena just for a minute. You know, there's been a lot of talk about who's going to be casted in the Marine 3. Randy Orton got a little bit of flack because he went AWOL on the Marines a couple times, spent some time in jail because of it. There's speculation now. I'm seeing word that he may be cast in the new Marine 3 movie. He does have some nagging injuries that they might be giving him some time off for. So the speculation has started already. And we'll have to just kind of wait and see what happens with him. But, you know, the beating he took tonight, I wouldn't blame him if he did take a month off just to rest his weary bones and get his head back into it. So we'll have to see what happens. All in all, I think it was a really good show. If you want to call it a thumbs up, thumbs up. But it was well worth the money tonight.
Yep. Totally agree. We want to know what you think. You can leave us comments on Gerwick.net. You can also leave us comments at the end of this podcast. Want to make notes of what we said here on the podcast. You can agree with us. You can totally disagree with us. Whatever you want to leave would be great. And I want to thank Jerry for coming on tonight. Really short notice. I thought this was a good idea to get a chance to review the show right after the show. And thank you so much, Jerry.
Hey, my pleasure, Steve. I'm not sure I'm ever a good idea, but just to let everybody know, Steve Gerwick's a good buddy of mine. He has a hell of a website, so check him out at www.gerwick.net. You can find me, prowrasslin.net, prowrasslin.net. I'm there every day. You can follow me on Twitter at jlwiseman13. I always have something to say that you might not always like, but at least I'm going to tell the truth. Steve, it's been my pleasure, brother. I'll be here anytime you need me to. Anything I can do for you, you just let me know.